Hey guys, welcome to the Fans of Wrestling show here on the GWH Radio Network. I'm Patrick the Yellow Man, joined by Mike Prime and Danny Danger to talk wrestling this week. Guys, how are you doing?
Doing great. It's always a great time to be a wrestling fan.
I mean, not always.
Quite
often it's a terrible time to be a wrestling fan.
Especially you sit through 3 hours of Raw. Then you ask yourself, why are you a fan?
You just have to look harder. But there's always great wrestling out there. It's just not always right in front of your face.
Something that I want to talk about today is I want to talk about Raw. Get it out of the way. But this Roman Reigns versus the world thing it's ridiculous to me. I mean, you haven't even had him face that much adversity against four guys because he beats them up all the time. Now you put him against all the heels in the company, and even then, it's just like, I was so uninterested. What did you guys think about the whole ordeal with Roman Reigns?
Yeah, I mean, if it's Kevin Owens versus Roman Reigns to further the storyline, then yeah, okay. I mean, I'm a Kevin Owens fan. I'll watch the match, but when it's like Vince McMahon has come back to TV and he's going to put Roman Reigns up against every heel on the roster, then it's like, no, I don't want to watch Roman Reigns squash everybody. I don't need to see Roman Reigns versus the world and then win.
Well, when we talked previously, when they first announced that the world title was going to be on the line in the Rumble, and we had high hopes that there were things they could do with it, that it would not purely be, Roman Reigns one versus all, that they could do things with it and kind of, you know, show the importance of other wrestlers, like, man, you know, this could be my big shot. You know, they could cut all kinds of promos with all different kinds of guys and make it seem as though, you know, this is now just not an opportunity to main event WrestleMania. It's an opportunity to win the championship and walk into WrestleMania as the champion. You know, we had high hopes that they could do this. And, you know, you hear promos from guys, you know, like Owens and Ambrose and Roman Reigns, you know, all the way down to, you know, hell, even R-Truth and Heath Slater, like those kind of guys all talking about how big and important it is. But they totally just neglected that. It's always been about, you know, about Roman Reigns and trying to, you know, him versus the world, which is, as you guys said, I mean, he's a big, heavy hitting, you know, strong guy who's always been made to look humongous and strong. So there's never been any adversity. It doesn't matter if you put 75 guys in front of him, he's just going to jump and punch one and spear the other and punch one and spear the other. And it's just going to go on like that. I get there's fans out there who are fans of his and like seeing him kick butt, but at the same time, it's not compelling storytelling because there is no highs and lows. There's no struggle to overcome. There's no adversity to fight over, you know, for him to rise up against. So it's some of the least entertaining storytelling that WWE's been doing in quite some time.
I don't even think people do that in the movies either. Or, you know, the good guys are always facing some type of adversity. You know, they're not always winning. And,
yeah,
you know, even they, if you go back to pro wrestling, because they did that with The Undertaker and Kane. Look how the Wyatt family just beat him up at the beginning, you know, and took him away. I mean, why can't they just end a Raw with the League of Nations just beating up, you know, Roman Reigns, and then, you know, say, hey, next week, what is Roman Reigns going to do? How is he going to come back from this too? You know, that's something that you have to look forward to.
It's compelling storytelling,
right.
Yeah.
It feels like, okay, well, who is he going to beat up next? That to me is absolutely terrible storytelling.
Well, I mean, it's not. I mean, we can say we just use Roman because he's, of course, the focal point of the story. But I mean, if they did this with anybody, it'd be pretty much, it would just be tiresome. If they did this to Brock Lesnar, after a while, we'd start going, okay, well, what are we worried about? It's kind of not in question that Brock Lesnar is going to win the belt because he's just dropping everybody on their head with suplexes. Like it might be fun for a while, but it's not compelling storytelling.
Like, I wouldn't want to see Kevin Owens get the same treatment, you know?
Where he just pop-up power bombs everybody and their mother. And,
yeah.
You know, and then there's, like, never any kind of, like, doubt in anybody's mind that he's just going to win the belt and walk to WrestleMania with it.
Well, I think it works with, like, a heel. Like, you know, think about when, you know, they were building Brock Lesnar before The Undertaker and even after. You know, he was – think about how he just destroyed John Cena when he beat him for the title. It's just like when you're a heel, it works. And I think that's why Roman Reigns would be a perfect heel right now. And even the way that he talks to Stephanie and Vince, you know, I mean, I get it where they're trying to make him, you know, like the anti-hero, the rebel who goes against authority, kind of like The Rock and Steve Austin. But I think they're going about it the wrong way, because there's a line between disregarding authority and being rebellious to being a bully, you know? And I think that that's a line that I think they've crossed with him, where Austin and The Rock were so successful is they picked their moments, they shined in at the right time, and he just looks like a big bully from the beginning. To me, the whole thing is just terrible. And I remember when he was first going down the ramp and not high-fiving anybody, but you know, now he has to do it because that's the only way that people are going to cheer for him is he high-fives people on his way to the ring.
Well, like, okay, your first point about Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar was made, you know, to look like a crusher and a destroyer, but he laid out The Undertaker. Ultimately, that's one man, okay? He didn't go and lay out six guys in the middle of the ring. He didn't lay out, you know, The Undertaker and Kane and John Cena all at the same time, you know? He didn't take an entire faction and, you know, like an entire big-name faction and just make them all look like chumps by just destroying every single one of them right away, you know? He did dominant victories, but they were one-on-one victories. And I think that's part of the thing, too. You know, like you said, it's that they're making him to the point where he's almost looking like a bully, because there were times when Steve Austin didn't always have the upper hand on Vince McMahon. And so it made you rally behind him the times when he did. And the same with The Rock, you know, he was up against the guys trying to hold him down, but he was held down. There were times when he wasn't at the top. There were times when, you know, they'd put him in like a handicap match against, you know, Team 3D, and they'd hit him with 3D through a table or something. Like, he'd lose the match and you go, oh man, they're screwing him over because it's two guys. They do that now, not even with Roman. They do that with now with just about any good guy. And they put him in a handicap match, you're like 98% sure that the good guy is going to beat the three bad guys in the handicap match. It's almost like it's not even a handicap anymore. It's just, let's see him beat up three guys at once. It's just the storytelling in that respect, in the traditional hero-villain dynamic, has just been kind of broken down.
You know, having Vince back, like, it's cool and it's also kind of weird. Because seeing him come out to ref that match with his sleeveless shirt on and flexing his arms and everything, it's like he still resembles the Vince of old, but he's old now. And it's just you can't do Austin and McMahon all over again with a different guy, because McMahon is not McMahon anymore. It's kind of like it's like when you get old enough where you think you can finally take your dad. But your dad is so old at that point that, like, if you win, you just beat up an old man. And if you lose, you just got beat up by an old man. And I feel like that's what's happening here. Like, either Roman Reigns is losing to an old man, or he's just beating the crap out of a senior citizen. And either, like, there's no way to win for him, you know?
Yeah, I see that. It's kind of, they're yet again trying to play on, you know, seemingly try to use nostalgia from the Attitude Era and just kind of tweak it and modernize it just enough to where it's slightly different. But yeah, it's you know, most of the time when they've done that, it hasn't worked to help long term.
I'm really hoping that he does not win the Rumble. To me, I have a feeling they'll make him number one and then they'll make him go through all 29 guys, and I would just hate to see that. But let's talk about Brock Lesnar's return. What about him? I mean, he looked good, and I was, you know, when he came and he started beating up the heels, I cringed a little bit, and then he attacked Roman, and I loved it. I think that was the favorite thing about Raw.
I think my favorite moment was Kalisto winning the United States Championship. That was, to me, a little unexpected, but we had kind of talked about how it seemed that WWE was wanting to position Kalisto as the breakout star of the Lucha Dragons, and I think with Sin Cara dislocating his shoulder and needing to take a little time off, I think it kind of pushed that forward. And seeing him win the United States title was actually surprising. It's not something that you could see coming from 2 weeks away. So to me, that was the highlight of Raw, just because I'm also such a big fan of his.
Yeah. So what do you guys think of that? I mean, you know, I think that he was in a role. He did, you know, the Salida del Sol at the TLC pay-per-view. And, you know, I think that got the Slammy for best moment or something like that. So I thought I knew they had to do something with him now that Sin Cara was, you know, injured. And I thought that this is the time to take advantage of that. And I think he's going to be giving Alberto Del Rio his rematch at SmackDown. Could he ever reach the heights Rey Mysterio reached?
I think he needs to not focus on trying to be the next Rey Mysterio and try to focus on being the first Kalisto. Like, he could, he could maybe reach a main event status, but I think there's different ways that he can do it that Rey, just the timing wasn't right for Rey to do, you know? I don't know. I want to say that he can be kind of a stronger face for the Latino demographic, as opposed to where Rey and Eddie were just like big wrestlers that happened to also be Latino. I think he can be like one of the first, like, he's a Latino superstar wrestler, you know? Like, I don't know if that even makes sense, but I think that he can. They want a guy who they can push as a top good guy who's Latino, who shows enough of his heritage and his culture that he's relatable to the Latinos, but doesn't do it too much to where other people, you know, white people are turned off by it. So I think he has the ability to do that. I was a little shocked when they were announcing some of the matches for SmackDown and saw that they're giving him a rematch. They have a pay-per-view this weekend. Why wouldn't you just put that on the pay-per-view? That seemed kind of strange to me, but that's for a different story.
Think about the fact that, like, just recently, they parked a truck of money outside of Alberto Del Rio's house to come back just to be boring Alberto Del Rio so that they could have a Latin guy. Meanwhile, Kalisto is walking around backstage at every TV taping. It just doesn't make any sense to me. I don't know why we weren't pushing him already, to be perfectly honest.
So I think they might have brought Del Rio back because they felt they needed a Latin star to build a Latin star. Like, I mean, so here's an example. Like, the original Sin Cara's run fell flat on its face, okay? And part of that reason being is that he could wrestle luchador style, but he couldn't really transition that outside of that. He could, you know, he had really good matches against, you know, Unico and the Sin Cara, Zul versus Negro feud. And he had good matches with Cesaro, you know, and Del Rio, guys who knew how to work the style that he could work, but he couldn't make it work into a good match with Sheamus. He couldn't make it work into a good match with, you know, somebody just, you know, kind of like a Randy Orton or something. He didn't know how to transition his style, and he just didn't connect. And so I think they might have brought Del Rio in to help possibly build either, you know, Sin Cara now or Kalisto, A, to see how fans react to them once they start doing, you know, doing matches, and then also to see how he starts transitioning, once he starts wrestling somebody who's not as versed in the lucha style. And so in case that, you know, in case he doesn't quite work out, they can just kind of go back with Del Rio as their number one Latino guy. So to me, I think that might have been part of it, because like you said, it's just, they essentially just paid a huge amount of money to bring back the same exact Alberto Del Rio that people crapped on so much, and then ended up firing.
This is it's gonna be a fantastic time. Danny, I mean, we've been fans of Kalisto for a long time. You know, when he was Samurai Del Sol and tearing it up. So I think that the fact that, you know, now this is his moment to shine, I think he's gonna do great. And look, he speaks the language.
That's one thing too. Yeah, that's another thing why they kept Unico, even though they fired Sin Cara, was because Unico, you know, I mean, he's Mexican, but he was born on the United States side. He took bookings and wrestled, you know, in the U.S. side and the Mexico side, and so he already knew the culture of both countries. Whereas original Sin Cara, Mystico was, you know, didn't really speak English at all, really, and or know the culture or anything.
So where do we go with Del Rio? I mean, of course, he's going to be he's going to stay a heel. He's part of the League of Nations. Do you guys like him better as a heel or a babyface? Because I hear both arguments. And the internet wrestling community, you know, keeps complaining about his status as a heel. But I don't know. I prefer him as a heel. How about you guys?
I prefer Del Rio as a heel. I mean, he came into the company, you know, as the Mexican aristocrat, and I liked that persona better. When he kind of made a sharp turn from being the Mexican aristocrat to being a man of the people, I felt it was forced, because he had spent several years being, oh, I'm above the people and all this, and then just like suddenly he's now. He doesn't drive the fancy cars, and he's just I'm the common man, and it felt forced. It didn't feel genuine, because it was such a sharp deviation without much reasoning behind it. And then when he went back to heel, he seemed more comfortable than he ever was as a face. So I prefer him as a heel. I think he seems to be more comfortable in a position of a heel in the company.
Yeah, I liked the Mexican aristocrat Alberto Del Rio. I liked the sports cars and the scarf and the ring announcer and the Titantron behind him as the cars coming out and all that. I mean, right? It's like as soon as he started to get popular, started to get over, they said, "Great! Now take away everything that makes him Alberto Del Rio." And all were as though we lost the cars and we lost the ring announcer and we even lost the scarf. And so now all we've got is like kind of frankly boring Mexican wrestler. Like that's, to me, that's all that's really left. He's talented in the ring and that's great. And he's frankly looks like he's on something since he's come back. But who is this guy and why should I care about him? I mean, if he's just Mexican wrestler, okay. But when I think Mexican wrestler, I don't think of Alberto Del Rio. I think of like, I don't know. I think of like Psychosis or, you know, somebody like that, or I guess Rey Mysterio. Mexican wrestler to me sounds a lot more like Kalisto than it does Alberto Del Rio. So I don't really, whether he's a heel or a face right now, Del Rio is just boring to me. There's nothing to him.
And maybe the being in the group will give him a little more life now. But yeah, absolutely. When he was, you know, with the fancy cars, and you think about it, you know, it worked so well for Ted DiBiase. It worked well for JBL. I mean, it reignited JBL's career when he did the whole thing being the rich guy. So it's kind of like, I think it's a good move with certain people, and it definitely works very well for Del Rio. And, you know, maybe they'll go to something similar. But yeah, the way that they brought him back with Zeb never made sense. You know, I mean, I think there's still time to work on that. And, you know, maybe a little time with the League of Nations will, you know, take us in. And then, you know, eventually they're going to split up and we'll see what happens. So, you know, I'm not that worried about it. Now, what about that big news from from Chad and Gable going to Evolve?
Yeah, we'll...
Along with Regal.
Regal is going to make an appearance at the Evolve show. And he's saying that he's got some plans. So he may be doing some type of announcement, maybe sharing something. Probably not, won't be on the iPay-per-view, but it'll be at the show. Chad and Gable actually going in, and they're going to be doing a signing, like a meet and greet signing at the Evolve shows.
Okay.
So that's what's going on. But still, I mean, the fact that, you know, WWE is sending two of their NXT guys over to an Evolve show, even in that capacity, it's a big deal, because it's, you know, you're putting some of your popular guys from NXT.
When they first announced that Regal would be there, I thought it was just going to be, you know, that it was going to be something like, and he'd cut some promo, yeah, off the iPay-per-view, and say he's here scouting talent, and, you know, cheer for your favorites, and, you know, and it'll be duly noted, you know, like that, something like that was my thought, that it would just be something like that. He'd just make the appearance like Zayn did. If they do more with it, even if they have them, you know, Jordan and Gable do a match that's not on the iPay-per-view versus somebody, I think it would be really good. You know, like you said, anything that they're doing to push that kind of that relationship and bring more spotlight to Evolve, it helps the industry as a whole.
Yeah, and I think it also works out that they're all going to be in the same city at the same time, and, you know, it's like a huge wrestling weekend in itself in Orlando. So it's really cool. You could see an NXT show, three Evolve shows, and the Royal Rumble. I mean, that's definitely cool. But yeah, when I saw they were coming, at first they teased it like, oh, they're making their Evolve debut, but then they put out that poster saying that they're gonna be, you know, signing autographs and taking pictures with the VIP ticket holders. I'm like, okay, that's bad. But still, it's just big that they really would send some of their talent. So I'm just wondering to see what else they're going to do. But
I guess you guys have probably seen some of the New Japan news with Nakamura. New Japan has acknowledged that he is leaving at the end of January, where they made it seem that it was leading to a match between Nakamura and Kenny Omega for the Intercontinental Championship. It now has been announced that that match is not going to happen, that they're actually stripping Nakamura of the championship, and they'll hold some kind of tournament, and the winner of that tournament will face Kenny Omega for the belt. What do you guys kind of think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I thought that it would have made more sense for him to drop the title to Omega, but I don't know. I mean, maybe they have other plans, you know, with doing a tournament and then, you know, having the winner that face Omega. I guess they could have done it differently, but with their next show after the shows with CMLL being in mid-February, I think that they would have rather the turn of the title be there. And maybe they just couldn't talk Nakamura into staying an extra 2 weeks to drop the title. And to them, it made more sense for just to strip him of the title. And, you know, it may also be a little bit out of spite because he's leaving them and he's not willing to stay or resign. You know, I doubt, you know, the fact that, you know, you look back at, you know, them telling New Japan on the day of the show of Wrestle Kingdom 10 that they were quitting, they were leaving. It's kind of like, you know, that's got to put a bad taste in their mouth as well. You know, it's funny to see, but, you know, I could understand it, and I'm not that surprised that they went that way. But it's also going to make the February 14th show even more interesting to see who will face Omega. Now, who do you guys think could do that?
I'm not sure. They consider this a heavyweight championship, so they're not going to have the juniors competing in this tournament. But I don't know who they want to put in that position, because they're already, you know, they've already announced Goto versus Okada. It seems that they've announced a rematch between, I think it's a rematch between the Bullet Club of Fale, Takahashi, and Tama Tonga versus the Briscoes and Yano.
Hang on, I don't know if you guys just saw this today. Tama Tonga is a free agent.
Really?
Yeah, he just tweeted today announcing he was a free agent.
after his dad just joined the Bullet Club at New Japan Pro Wrestling. He's now a free agent.
I don't think he ever joined the Bullet Club. More like came in as a friend of the Bullet
Club. They did a promo afterwards showing Anderson and Fale and Tonga talking about him as the newest member. I mean, yeah, granted, Jeff Jarrett and Scott D'Amore were like Bullet Club members, but you know, it's just like they made the guy member a couple weeks ago, and now he's not anymore.
Yeah, it's at @Tama_Tonga with a blue check mark. Sorry to bust ... #FreeAgent.
Well, that'll be interesting. So I guess that will remain 4 Bullet Club members that will stay in New Japan.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, there's – well, okay. Well, so we got
– well,
no,
5.
There's,
yeah, yeah. 5. That leaves him with 5. Never mind.
The Elite and then Fale and Takahashi.
Right, which – Fale signed a contract.
Yeah, Fale. Yeah, that was a big thing. He said that he, you know, they've been good to him and they wanted him and showcased him when no one else would, so that he was going to stay loyal to them.
Well, so, you also look at the fact that everybody else is leaving, and
yeah, this could be a time for him to shine a little more.
Because I believe that WWE was interested in him as well. So you use that as leverage, right? Like, hey, yeah, WWE's interested in me too. I'm thinking of leaving. We'll give you a contract stay. It's kind of like the same thing with Ricky Romero. I mean, he was offered a training position with WWE, and you know, they offered him a 2-year deal. They don't offer many people 2-year deals, so in New Japan, so he took that.
That's true. They're kind of more known for their a year at a time deal.
February 14th show, I think they've also announced that Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows are getting a rematch as well for the tag team titles.
Did you guys see Kenny Omega's tweet about the Shinsuke being stripped of the title?
Yeah.
Said, don't worry about the Shinsuke match. I'll just beat him when he comes back.
I thought that was pretty funny. That's pretty pretty true Bullet Club fashion there too, you know?
Exactly.
That was funny. Which is, I mean, and that's, you know, I mean, it's one of those things. Guys have gone and come back. Guys have gone and come back. You know, it's not unusual. Guys to leave a big fanfare and it not pan out and they come back. I mean, Okada did that. This was before he became the Rainmaker, though. He went to TNA and he kind of floundered around there for a year, maybe a year and a half. They didn't really do anything with him. And then he came back and kind of turned himself around and became the Rainmaker, and hell, now he's the IWGP Heavyweight Champion.
With New Japan, I think that with the 4 guys leaving, it's done so much that I think they've had to scramble some plans for their future. But I think, to me, the biggest winner of the whole thing is Kenny Omega. I mean, I think that he showed the day after the Wrestle Kingdom 10 show that he really is a star. And could you imagine if he had stayed with WWE? He probably wouldn't be anything than a lower mid-card guy right now.
He'd be selling them Superman punches.
So,
when was Kenny Omega with WWE?
He had a developmental deal with them back in the day.
Oh, that
Like in Deep South, or was it OVW?
I thought it was... It was one.
Oh,
of those.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, okay. I did see. There was a. No, it was deep. It was Deep South Championship Wrestling. Yeah, because
I thought it was Deep
something
South.
Now I saw something online today, where he talks about that, and like the biggest thing he learned, you know, from that time was, you know, is to be yourself and to not make compromises and stuff. Something along those lines. I do remember seeing something about that now, but I think that was pretty much before he went to Japan and then kind of. He's made himself a star just by doing things his own way.
Right. So I think that was a blessing in disguise that he didn't stay there. But man, this kid is going to be a star. I mean, I could very well see him this time next year, you know, by the next Wrestle Kingdom, he could very well be the next challenger for Okada if Okada remains champion.
Oh, it's a major opportunity for him.
So you see him winning the G1 Climax.
He could do that, or, you know, he could beat the G1 Climax winner. Because remember, that shot is always, you know,
that's true. That
shot's on the line.
Open to be defended. That's true.
He, with help from the Young Bucks, can cheat and win the rights for the title shot. from the one, the winner of the G1 Climax. So there's a lot of different options. But yeah, I think that to me, he's this is his year. He's going to be one of the top guys, you know, in New Japan. And I love it. I mean, he's great on the mic. He's got a great personality. He's very entertaining. And I just, you know, I keep watching that that little promo after he beat up AJ Styles because I just love it. I don't want to see more of him. And now that the other Bullet Club guys are gone and are going to be gone, it's his moment to shine.
I'm interested to see how he transitions to working against heavyweight wrestlers again, though. I mean, most of his, even his time in other promotions in Japan, like DDT Pro and stuff, he was typically a junior. I mean, he's an exceptionally strong guy. He slings juniors around. I don't know if he'll be able to do that to some of the heavyweight guys. I think he may or may not have to change his style, at least for depending on the opponent.
Yeah,
I'm interested to see how he's able to make those adjustments.
I think he'll be able to adjust. I mean, just he's very skillful. So, I mean, it'll be at least fun to watch. And, you know, when you're a heel, though, if you're the smaller guy, it give, you know, tendencies to cheat more to try to gain an advantage and win. And he's in the perfect role for that.
Very true.
So a few weeks ago, we made our predictions on who would make the WWE Hall of Fame this year. And they announced their first inductee. And we get Sting. I think this is an obvious choice.
Isn't it amazing that they were able to actually keep this under wraps before TMZ was able to break the story?
You mean just like Sting walking down the street and then just say, "Hey, Sting, what's up?" And he's like, "Oh, yeah, I'm going to the Hall of Fame this year."
No, I mean like the way that they always send this stuff to TMZ and then act like they like figured it out and broke
yeah.
the story.
Yeah, no, well, yeah. That's what they did with Darren Young, though. Like they were just walking down the street talking to him. And he was like, "Oh, yeah, I'm openly gay and a wrestler." Like they didn't even really ask, like hard press him information about this. He just like casually mentioned it and it came out.
Well, that there's a story there about Darren having some kind of a friendship with the TMZ guy that came up.
Oh, so he also like
yeah. There's rumors about like it kind of being his employment employment insurance plan.
Give a rub to his buddy kind of thing.
Yeah, and that and just kind of put himself out there so he's harder to fire.
So yeah, I like this. Now, do you think they're gonna let Flair be the one that inducts him? That'll be an entertaining introduction.
If we have to watch Ric Flair cry a lot, I would say please don't. I've seen that guy shed crocodile tears and blubber way too much on WWE TV in the last 18 months.
What about how about Luger?
Never. They're never going to let – first of all, they're not going to let him, you know, cripple his way into the podium.
Oh, come on. He's up and walking these days.
And secondly, they still hold a grudge.
WWE's pretty good about holding grudges.
In recent years, they're pretty good about letting those things go.
When it's right for them, though.
Yeah, they're not going to make any money from Lex Luger.
I don't think they have a whole lot to gain from like bridging a gap between them and Lex Luger.
Well, you know who could use the rub?
Prime for Danger.
Roman Reigns.
Oh,
yeah,
I was hoping
Lex Luger's not gonna give him that kind of rub.
So who else do you think would be a good choice apart from the two guys you mentioned?
Mick Foley could be a good option. Who else? I see. That's what I think is like Flair would be the perfect option. I mean, Flair's the guy who literally made Sting.
It seems the most logical that they would go that way. Also, especially now that Flair's back on TV too.
Yeah, you already have him there. You don't have to. And you know, I think Sting would prefer Luger maybe.
Yeah.
But they're gonna be like, yeah, we're inducting you. Let's do Flair. He's like, all right, sure. So yeah, but who do you think is going to be next? On Twitter, people started a petition for Jacqueline to get inducted.
Well, we talked about Jackie Moore, and I think I'm not sure if they'll do it right away because I think she is still kind of seen as a TNA a little bit, and also there might be somebody else that they want to do on top. But she is from Texas, former Miss Texas. So maybe they do go with her.
You guys hear that Paige got injured?
I didn't hear specifics, but I heard that may be the reason she's been kept off TV.
Yeah,
is that confirmed now? Because that was a rumor for like a week, but I thought that got debunked.
Yeah. She took a bump and got a concussion, so...
Okay, it's concussion. Okay. The biggest winner of that's Becky Lynch. I think the crowd's starting to get behind Becky, especially with the kind of showdown she had with Charlotte and the really solid promo she cut afterwards, about taking her championship and taking her arm and those kind of things. I think the crowd's really starting to get behind Becky, and I think this could be her time to break out.
I mean, they'll use her because they need to, but I don't have that much faith that they're going to let her. I mean, do we even know if anybody's challenging Charlotte for the title?
It's Becky Lynch, right?
Did they announce that?
I thought they did. I thought that was one of the few announced matches. Apparently, Sasha Banks has been out of action since for the last few weeks. It's now being speculated that she suffered an MCL injury in one of her knees.
Yeah, I heard something like that, but I haven't seen any confirmation. So
I'm just looking at something right now from Mike Johnson.
Oh yeah, because the PWI Insider, it's the Bible of professional wrestling news.
It's definitely one of them. I mean, they say that this is from what they're told. And whether it's true or not, I mean, she hasn't been on TV wrestling the last few weeks.
That's true.
So, if she can't compete, she can still be on TV, but she's not going to wrestle. Paige can't wrestle, the Natty just started coming back, but I don't think I have no idea if they're ever going to do anything big with Natalya again. They may be waiting for Kid and Cesaro to come back so she can manage them and fight in trios matches again. I don't know if they're going to push her as a top competitor in the division. Now's the time to go with Becky Lynch. Somebody was saying that Becky Lynch is pretty much one of the true like faces in WWE because she's actually a good guy who does the right thing for the right reasons and is facing adversity that she has to overcome. Most of the other good guys are, don't really have that. They're not getting constantly shoved down and showing that they're climbing a little bit up and a little bit higher and a little bit higher, like we were just talking about Roman Reigns. He he's not really facing adversities. There's not really anything he has to overcome in order to achieve the goals that he wants to. It doesn't seem like it's going to be that difficult for him. For her, it seems like there's kind of an uphill climb.
Do you guys think that Sasha would be the one that challenges Charlotte at WrestleMania? Or do you think they'll put multiple girls in there in a match together?
History of the last few years would show that it would probably be a multi-girl match, even if it's a three-way.
I don't know, man. I think they're going Sasha and Charlotte for WrestleMania. I think they've been trying to get there for a while.
Yeah, I mean, they could do that. Yet again, that would be something that's kind of more showcasing the Divas Revolution, is that they're pulling away from just throw a bunch of women on there to actually, here's two women, here's a story, here's why they're fighting, let them have a match.
Now, the problem is that then you've got to turn Sasha face by April.
Or you got to turn Charlotte back face. And,
You want to keep her as a heel. I think she's starting to get there, and once she does, I think she'll do a great job.
Oh my God, look how over Becky is just feuding with her.
Yeah, definitely. That's big. I think that Sasha, everybody loves Sasha so much. I mean, everybody wants Sasha.
but I think they also like her for the boss character. I think if you do something like you did with Alberto Del Rio, where you say, hey, they're starting to get over, let's go ahead and take away all the stuff that people actually like about this character,
right,
they're not going to like her anymore. If you take away her arrogance, if you take away her snotty attitude and the I'm the boss and I'm better than everybody else, like, that takes away a lot of the things that people really like about her. And she just becomes, you know, generic good guy. Like, she started out as a face in NXT, and then it didn't really do anything. It wasn't until she started, you know, she was pretty much a heel the rest of her NXT run. And that's what people liked about her. I think if you turn her face, you get a watered down version and people aren't going to be as receptive to it. They'll probably do it, but that doesn't mean it's the best idea.
Yeah, but I think she's talented enough that she would be able to still use some of those tactics and still get over, you know, as a babyface. I think she can still keep those things as a babyface. I think there's ways around it. But yeah, who knows? Now, speaking of divas or women wrestlers, did you hear that Santana Garrett will be on NXT in February?
Yes, I did hear that.
Who is that?
This is Santana Garrett. She's right now on the independent scene. She holds almost any like women's championships, kind of like Jushin Liger was in like 96. You think of a women's division or a women's, you know, a place that women's wrestling is decent, and if she's not holding the title, she's a contender there. I think currently she holds 6 or 7 championships. She just recently lost the Shine Championship. But she holds like 6 or 7 different women's championships. She was on TNA briefly as Brittany. I think she was WWE developmental at one time, in Florida Championship Wrestling. But yeah, so they, and from what I hear, it's actually a competitive match. It's not like when they put Deonna Purrazzo out there or bring in somebody else and change their name and like let them get maybe 3 moves out and then get squashed. She has a supposedly competitive match.
Yeah, and she currently holds 14 titles in the independents.
14. Goodness gracious, I didn't realize it was that many.
Yes. I could list them all, but you know.
Go ahead, do it.
All right, fine. One. She's the current APWA Mason-Dixon Women's Champion, current BPW Tag Team Champion, current CEWE Vixens Champion, the current CCW Ladies Champion, the current JCW Women's Champion, the current NWA Worlds, no, she lost that title, sorry. The current NPW Women's Champion, the current OPW Women's Champion, the current Ring Warriors Battling Bombshells Champion, the current SCW Florida Cruiserweight Champion, the current SCW Women's Champion, the current USPW Women's Champion, the current USWA Women's Champion, and the current WOW Tag Team Champion, and the current Wonder of Stardom Champion.
Yeah, she also holds the belt in Japan. Yep. I mean, she's one of the many things she has going for her is that, you know, apart from being a fantastic athlete, she has a good charisma about her. She's very attractive, but she also kind of holds that like girl next door kind of thing. Like she could, you know, she's somebody that you could know that you could be friends with. She just happens to be very attractive and a very good wrestler. You know, I think that's one of the things that a lot of companies like about her too, is that she is, you know, she does kind of have those qualities. And I mean, they may be looking to scoop her up. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, she was also ranked the number one wrestler, and this is men and women, of 2015 and the Indie Power Rankings. And she was, I believe, the 4th ranked female in the PWI 50.
Yeah, she was the first ranked independent wrestler. I think it went Nikki and I can't remember. I got it right here around somewhere. But I think, she was the first.
Indie girl. Yeah, we did talk about that. So, I mean, that's huge. So NXT's taking a look at her. Man, could you imagine the women's division with her in there?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they could have had her all along, you know, but like, you know, I mean, but maybe that was, she was able to hone her skills and find, you know, and be able to show people what she had to offer by being on the independent scene a little bit, you know, but yeah, I mean, she has, like, you just listed, you know, so many different championships, not only here in the United States, but also in Japan and Stardom. Even just if she's there just kind of a one time and they give her this strong competitive match, I think it's definitely really good. I'm happy for her and I'm happy to see her.
I've never got to see her live, but I've seen a few of her matches on YouTube. And yeah, she does a very good job. You know, sometimes when I see some girls wrestling, it kind of looks like they're trying too hard or something's come out sloppy. But no, she's really good. And I think that she can do a lot for the women's division. And there's a lot of good matches she could have in there. And right now, we talked about, you know, the women's division before NXT, you know, who does Bayley have as challengers, you know, with the rest of the four horsewomen moving up to the main roster. You know, you have Asuka, but then who else do you really have? You know,
yeah. Bayley already kind of knocked off a few of them.
Yeah,
she's already beaten Alexa Bliss. She's already beaten Eva Marie. She's already beaten Nia Jax. Yeah. You know, like, they burned through those first time challenge matches very quickly.
And it's not like even those girls were that great either. You know?
Yeah, they weren't. They weren't strong competitive matches, and everybody was like, "Oh man, maybe Bayley's gonna actually lose." It was more like, please don't let Bayley lose the title to them.
Yeah, and I even think that the Nia Jax one was rushed.
I didn't like that match. I thought the match was boring. Nia Jax hit like the same three moves like a dozen times each. She hit the leg drop on her 8 times. She Samoan dropped her at least a half dozen times. I think it showed more than showing Bayley overcoming, the big challenger. I think it showed the limitations of Nia Jax and that they rushed her into that position.
You kind of felt bad for the London fans because you could tell, like, just on the broadcast, you could tell they were expecting more.
Yeah. Well, every other match they went, like, bananas for. And then, like, after a couple minutes into that one, they started dying out and started dying out, you know? And then a little bit later in the night, they found their energy again. But that kind of slowed down the pace of the night.
That match didn't make sense at all to me. And I think that they could have waited a little longer for that one, but they don't have that many heels, you know, heel girls and little girls for her to work with that are ready, you know.
They have two that they haven't played with yet, but that's, you know, in Dana Brooke and Emma, but they're embroiled in that feud with Oscar right now.
Right, right. So they, you know, they were doing something.
They're kind of technically tied up, yeah.
So yeah, I think it'll be cool. I think, you know, you have so many girls in the independents that they could, you know, call in at any time. Kimberly.
I was gonna say I can think of a dozen right now, but some of them they may not use. You know, some of them they haven't showed interest in over the past several years, and I don't think they ever will.
No, how about the injury that Matt Taven had? It was worse than they expected.
Yeah, it was a lot worse than they expected. I mean, from what we saw at first, it seemed that, you know, maybe he twisted or sprained his knee. No, the guy tore his ACL.
Yeah, he had surgery. Tore his ACL, ruptured lateral meniscus, and tore his medial meniscus.
Yeah, so he had the reconstructive surgery today. They said it'll be 9 months before he's probably back in the ring. I mean, the big speculation was that I think his Ring of Honor contract is either up at the beginning of February or end of February or the beginning of March. And so once Mike left and once, like, he tweaked his knee, you know, sprained his knee, it kind of seemed like he was just going to sit on the shelf and just wait that time out and then leave when his contract was up and maybe go join Mike and Maria on TNA. But if he's not going to be able to wrestle for 9 months, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if Ring of Honor maybe, you know, offers him an extension, you know, to sit out the rest of his contract and then spend another 6 or 8 months with them after that, or he just leaves and then sits at home for 7 months not making any money. You know, I'm not sure how that'll play out for him.
Yeah, that whole situation's going to be weird. But dude, it's just, that's a tough break.
It really is. It really is. The guy's hitting his stride.
And I think that he had a chance. Now was a chance that he had to have a, you know, if they didn't team him up with Adam Cole, he could have had his own singles run, or
try a singles run again. Yeah,
right. And he, you know, but no, and like with the injury, he set back so much, and that sucks. And who knows? I mean, I know WWE likes to extend the contracts of wrestlers who get injured, but that's not to say that Ring of Honor does the same thing, you know?
Yeah, they may not. I mean, they just recently talked about doing healthcare plans for, like, their wrestlers. Like, if somebody's hurt in their ring, they'll pay for it. I mean, when Alex Shelley had his teeth knocked out by Mark Briscoe's knee brace, Ring of Honor paid for the surgery and everything to have that fixed for him. So I assume that they paid the majority of, if not all, the medical bills for Taven to have that surgery, since he did, you know, rip his knee apart on pay-per-view for them.
Have you checked out this thing with Bennett and Maria, with them being the miracle, or with him being the miracle? Did you guys catch anything else? I don't know if you guys saw the pay-per-view. I didn't, but
the one night only things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the one night only.
I heard about it, that he he had like essentially a squash match, you know.
Yeah.
I didn't really read too much into it as to who he wrestled or what it was, but I think he pretty much just went out there and beat somebody fairly quickly.
Well, it's kind of like 2008 TNA all over again. Like, Awesome Kong is back and Beer Money is reuniting, and it's like, if you loved TNA 7 years ago, I have news for you.
And what about Awesome Kong being part of
the Dollhouse? I thought Awesome Kong just announced her retirement. That was the last news I heard, is that she had retired from professional wrestling.
I that's what I heard too. I was so shocked that she was back, and then she was part of Dollhouse. That, I mean,
of all groups, yeah,
that makes no sense.
Unless there's going to do something where they somehow have kind of, you know, control over the monster somehow. I don't know. I don't know how they're going to do it. They can probably explain it in some wacky and unusual way, like TNA sometimes does.
And then shove everybody in front of a train.
Yeah, yeah. And then like a couple months later, just pretend like that didn't happen.
Yeah, man. I don't know. They're doing lower numbers than soap opera reruns the last time I saw.
Well, yeah. I mean, how can you compete against, you know, reruns of soap operas?
I mean, it's cool that Mike Bennett, you know, is there and all. I don't know why he tried to debut as Armando Estrada.
Yeah, with the hat and everything, know, too. Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like if you're trying to sign, like, a, you know, a quote unquote indie guy to get you some internet buzz, I don't know if Mike Bennett's the guy that I would have signed.
Hey, man, he's the internet darling. Okay, didn't you hear him in that promo?
I don't know. I think there might have been better guys to sign, but
There are. We talked about it. Mike Bennett is really, really, really okay.
Really, just super, super okay.
But he's got Maria next to him, and
yeah,
that makes him better. All right, and hey guys, how about PWX news? Man, Taken by Force 3 just happened, and the experience is only getting better. John Skyler successfully retained his heavyweight title. Country Jack remains tag team champions. Gunner defeats Moose for the TV title. And Steve Corino joins the experience.
Well, Corino kind of came in as like, he's supposed to be the mastermind behind it all. So they're already kind of talking like on social media, like they're kind of trying like, look, we're the new Horsemen kind of thing, you know, like with Steve Corino as the, the role of J.J. Dillon. But I mean, yeah, they're doing – I mean, PWX has done a lot of good stuff. You know, AWE's Chip Day wrestles there. Joseph Black wrestles there. Cedric Alexander, of course. David Starr's wrestled there before. You know, a lot of people that have come down to Atlanta, a lot of guys who've gone on to bigger things. I've seen they've had Michael Elgin and Kevin Steen on shows in the past. They bring in – and Moose, for example. I mean, they bring in some big names, and they put on decent shows. They're always on iPay-per-view, on DVDs. And then it was just announced today that at their next PWX next show on February 20th, that they will be bringing in Sami Callihan, the Callihan Death Machine.
Yeah, that's really pretty good. Definitely, it's a road trip that we should consider. But yeah, I think that PWX is doing some pretty good things here with the talent that they have. A lot of, you know, great talent. And, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I just been loving following the experience. I know it's supposed to be heels, but I just, you know, I enjoyed the whole group. And, you know, now they have all the belts. And now that Sami Callihan's coming in, that's going to be huge.
Yeah, you know, there's a really great buzz around PWX right now. I almost made the drive up there when they did a Superkick World and they brought in the Young Bucks. Up until the day of, I was almost going to do
I backed out that morning. Yeah, I ended up – something else came up. But, yeah, I was thinking about making that drive too. One of the things that helps play to their advantage is I think they work pretty closely with highspots.com. So they can get a lot of some bigger guys. And then, of course, their shows get more exposure because they're made into DVDs and put out there pretty quickly. So that's definitely played in their advantage. And I mean, they're making the most of it. You know, it's not like they're putting out some kind of crap product and then just like pushing on everybody. You know, they're actually doing something pretty good. And when I first started going to AWE shows, that's kind of what I was thinking. I was like, PWX and AWE are kind of like the two, modern style independents in the Southeast.
It's gonna be a really good show, Danny. I think that it's screaming road trip. So their next show, The Road to Rise of a Champion, will be on February 20th in Gastonia, North Carolina.
That'd be the first out of state FOW road trip show if it happens, correct?
Absolutely. I guess the farthest we've gone is we've gone to Barnesville, and we went to Empire in Roswell, Georgia. That was borderline. We were right at the border.
That's but almost there. Yeah. Could have probably thrown a rock and it landed in another state. We should definitely consider taking a trip to see the Callihan Death Machine.
Mike and Danny, you guys had the chance to talk to Ken Lee and Chris Krunk from the Spring Street Suicide Squad. So now we're going to play the conversation of Prime for Danger and the Spring Street Suicide Squad.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are here with Ken Lee and Chris Krunk, the Spring Street Suicide Squad. Gentlemen, how are you doing tonight?
I'm crazy. Good, man. How are you?
We're doing good. We're doing good. So we wanted to have you on the show because we've talked about you guys several times on the show that we, as the AWE fanatics, feel like you're kind of our guys, like you're our team. We kind of feel like we had a part in helping bring you together in a sense, and kind of have adopted you guys as our team. So it's one of the reasons why we wanted to kind of have you guys on the show and kind of talk to you guys about your individual wrestling careers and the paths that kind of brought you to AWE and kind of formed together. And then of course, what you guys hope to do with the team and where it goes from there. So I think we'll start with Ken. Ken, I know you've had a little more experience in AWE, than Chris has. You were in AWE, season one. Tell us a little bit about your experience and kind of the highs and lows of your season one in AWE.
Man, that's a long story. But if I had to start anywhere, I would say it all kind of started after we started doing some work for some of the Beyond Wrestling sleeper shows. And how I ended up in AWE was actually through Chip. He ended up speaking to Josh, told him about me, and then that's when I got the invite to do the sink or swim thing that they were originally doing. Like, I want to say we were back out in Canton. And then ever since then, you know, I guess obviously I did well enough to get the invite back. And then, it was pretty much the start to that whole thing. And then it just kind of took off from there. But where I was at, I guess at the time, mentally, I guess I wasn't, I feel like I was not my best. So that's why I feel like a lot of what I did during that time wasn't as good as I would have liked. In which in case, you know, that ended up to me leaving shortly after. So, but it's definitely been an experience. I'm just, honestly, like, I'm happy to be back.
Okay, so I saw that you didn't debut right away at the beginning of season two. You kind of came in a little bit later. So how do you feel that this time has been different than your first kind of short run in AWE?
All of my personal, like, demons, garbage, whatever, you know, all the just, like, the woes of, you know, my day-to-day life, it's nowhere near anything professional for me. So when I'm, you know, at the show or any show for that matter, like, I am 100% clear. My mind's focused strictly on wrestling because ultimately I feel like that's all I got left. So I don't want to half-ass it. And, you know, so it just helps a lot that I can really just, you know, tune into everything and do everything that, you know, I set out to do for myself.
Well, that seems to play right into the Suicide Squad name then, kind of, doesn't it? You know?
Just about. Just about.
Okay, Chris, let's go with you. Now, you haven't been in AWE as long as Ken has. Tell us how you first came to AWE.
Let's see. So how I got to AWE. The easiest thing is I really just came to a show. I went to Homegrown at the Masquerade where the main was Trevor Lee and Kyle Matthews. And I actually sat in the crowd and watched the show. And mainly because I'd heard so much about it and people told me, they're like, hey, if you want to get noticed, if you want to make it in wrestling and you're in this area, that's just pretty much where you need to go. So I went to a show, watched it, of course, seen a lot of the guys I knew, and I was like, okay, I'm going to get on the show. So I came to another show and stayed after and spoke, of course, with like Josh and the right people. And I was like, if you just give me a chance, I can show you that I belong here. And they gave me an opportunity in that Fatal 4-Way. It was me, Kenley, Marco, and...
Shit. No, Eli.
Eli, yeah, it was Eli Daniels, Eli, right?
Yeah, Eli Daniels. And I mean, no offense to the other guys in the match, but I feel like me and Ken like really showed out there.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. That, I mean, like,
I'd agree with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was kind of where we had definitely take notice that both of you guys were something special. You guys were able to kind of show your talents a little more than you had been able to in other matches.
Right. Yeah. Definitely. And we did some stuff that, I mean, honestly, like, it was risky. We did like a poison rana.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Normally
that was the one that everybody in the crowd just nearly flipped their shits when you guys did that, man. They're like, holy crap. Whoa.
And we're just doing, and it's not so much like we're trying to do stuff that's like unsafe. We were just like, we got to stand out. Cause I want to stay here. Ken wants to break out and be a star here. So we knew, like, with the other, no offense to the two guys in the matches, we just knew like it was our time. So we'll use this little time we're going to have in the ring together to show what we got. So that way a win, because we know that everybody's watching the matches through the curtain. We know that everybody in the crowd like are paying attention. You guys dictate who gets booked on the shows. Like, you might as well just be the bookers yourselves, because if you don't like somebody, they're not coming back. And I think that's awesome. Like, so I know that like in front of a crowd like you, like I have to do stuff that you like. Like, it doesn't matter so much if the promoter likes it, which I'm sure they do, but that's about you guys, and that's why I like working the show.
You know, Chris, I think that you're a good example. of that. You know, we've been there's been some discussions among some of the other AWE fans lately about how harshly we should reject certain things, and what, you know, what is the difference between being engaged and being, you know, having respect. And there's been some matches and some segments lately at some of the recent shows that have kind of gotten all, you know, just booed straight out of the building. I know that footage from the most recent episode of the Milo Beasley show has hit YouTube now. That's a good example of like just a segment that we weren't into and just somebody that we weren't into and us sort of not even letting them do what they're out there to do. And my position has been that things like that need to happen sometimes so that when you do get, when something does get over, it means something. There's something there. And I think that you're a great example of that, that, you know, the first time we saw you, you know, we didn't really know who you were. I was one of the guys chanting, like, you know, screaming, like tagging the emo guy and things like that. But then we see you in that match with Jimmy Rave, you know, and now at this point with Ken, you're one of the most over guys in AWE. So it's like over time, now you feel like you're one of our hometown guys. You're an AWE guy. And that means something because there are things that get rejected, you know, harshly.
Right. No, I get that. When I showed up in AWE, I, like, whether I've been wrestling for how long I have or not, I knew that I have to prove I can hang here, because, I mean, it doesn't matter how long you've wrestled if you can't hang with the style and work with anyone there. And especially when I stepped in the ring with Jimmy Rave, like, that really helped me show you guys, like, what I was capable of. So that way, of course, then you can actually, like, buy into the character, like, hey, who is Chris Kronk and why would we want to see him every week? So it really helped out, and I'm hugely appreciative of it.
Oh yeah, man! Like, that was, I mean, like, you guys did well in your four way, but honestly, for me, Chris, that was when you finally made me stand up and take notice, and, you know, and say, dude, okay, this guy is somebody we need to keep an eye on and we need to watch. Because I mean, Grant, you know, Jimmy is of course, as we all kind of know, he's probably one of the best guys, if not the best, in Georgia. Yeah. But you were, I mean, we've seen him have other matches in AWE against guys he just kind of, it's obvious he ran circles around, you know? They couldn't really, they weren't really able to be up to the task. But you went up there and, you know, what essentially could have just been kind of a squash / showcase for Jimmy was actually a very competitive match. And
it should have been a title match.
There you go. That was like the only non-title match he's had all year. Like,
I know. I was like, how did
you die?
Because of a
few minutes, you died.
He killed him. He killed you with that fucking forearm, dude. Like, I still watched that video, and I'm like, oh, he looks like he got hit with it. He looks like he got shot.
Hit me with that
forearm. It's an amazing spot, dude. Like, I watched that match.
Grabbed my pants.
It just looks like he got shot. Like, holy crap.
Jimmy can hit somebody as hard as he wants. At that point, like, I think I was unconscious, and I thought, why do I wrestle? And then I was like, oh, that's right, I like wrestling. Okay, so
you think you got like a flash knockout real quick, or like knock kind of silly for a second there?
Oh yeah, I saw the white light when he came for him, but all worth it, because I like to work snug and new contact, so it's definitely what I'm looking forward to do.
Okay, so we've talked about you guys and your singles paths. What was what kind of started you guys teaming together in AWA? Was the first time that you guys were a team, was that at the Masquerade where you guys teamed with in the trios match with Jake Durden?
It was.
Mm-hmm. That was the first.
So tell us kind of about that match.
The match, one, we get to work the submission squad, which rules, because they're quite the accomplished trios team.
Yes.
And Jake, he was an awesome guy to work with, and they were like
a monster.
We pretty much had the job of, they were like, Chris, Ken, when you go out there, this is your chance. Like, if you guys want to be a successful tag team, this is your chance to show us what you can do. And we took the challenge, even though it was a six-man, and just went with it.
I mean, I think you guys did a good success. I mean, yet again, that was where I was like, when we were seeing it, like Mike and I was sitting right there next to Mike, and we were like, "This, I want to see these guys team together more." You know, I mean,
that's
you guys,
like the first thing we said.
Yeah, you guys played with the, you know, like the, like Ken just said, our own personal monster. Like you guys kind of played with that a little bit, like whoa, 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 no, Jake, calm down, you know, like that kind of thing. But yeah, we're just like, man, I want to see these guys team together more. So that was the goal. I think you guys accomplished it at least enough with us and whoever else, you know, the other fans that were there. And so at that moment, did you guys kind of decide that you wanted to be a tag team, or was this, were you guys kind of thrown together as a team, or was this something you had kind of planned out a little bit in advance between the two of you?
Well, I would say it was during that match. Like, matter of fact, specifically right after the concrete floor caught me after the moonsault.
Oh, good.
Whoever's back.
Yeah.
It was at that moment that I wasn't
screwed. Who called that spot? What an idiot.
You're the moron. I'm sorry. But no, it was probably at that moment after, you know, I scraped myself up off the ground and we got back in the ring to catch, you know, or whoever flipped on us from like the little balcony thing, whatever that was. Awesome. I remember before we caught him, I was looking straight at Chris and I was like, you know what? I'm glad we're a team and I'm glad this happened, but my fucking back hurts. Next thing I know, we turn around and we're all just laid out on the floor. Oh, man. It was worth it. I mean, you know, looking back on it, I remember being asked about, you know, if I'd be up to tag with anybody, if I'd be up to tag with Chris. And I was just like, sure, you know, I'm not a difficult guy to work with. I'll do whatever you ask me to do. I'm not going to bitch about it. I'm not going to complain. You're, you know, at the end of the day, you're the boss. I'm the talent. I'm here for a job. That's it. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And then, you know, we'll just see where we go from there. But obviously, since that pairing, I feel like we've been very successful, and it's been good for everybody. I feel like been good for me, good for Chris, good for the company, and you know, you guys have something that you can just have a ball with too. I feel like.
Yeah, I mean that's.
Yeah, you know, I think that for a while there's been a lack of heroes in AWE, like from a storyline perspective, but also just from like. Guys that are that feel like our hometown guys that we see succeed and that we see win matches and that we get to cheer for, all of us together, you know, whether you're you know, you typically boo the heels or the faces, you kind of, you know, we all get to get behind something like you guys. And so even though you guys are involved in from a storyline perspective in the, you know, with the title and the hierarchy and all everything else going on in AWE, you guys are like a breath of fresh air of like, these are AWE guys that come out, that do well, that win matches, that we all get to cheer for. And there was a lack of that for a long time. So, I mean, I think that, you know, maybe that's a part of the reason that you guys have been so successful is that the fans were ready for something like what you guys are offering.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely feel like at least from, you know, as far as like where I see it, I feel like we're very unique. if that makes any kind of sense, like we're not your typical, you know, good guy team. We're not, you know, kissing anybody's ass or anything like that. I think we're very organic, and I think that's why it's so easy to get behind us. But then, you know, I don't know. You know, it's not like I poll everybody and be like, oh, hey, why do you like us? I don't even ask Chris that, to be honest. I just kind of just run with it, and I mean, that's, you know, why bother stressing or trying to figure it out when, you know, whatever we're doing, it's working.
Well, I think you do kind of touch on something there. I think it is because it feels organic, because you guys just feel like you just kind of mesh together. You guys feel like you're just out there kind of hanging out, having a good time. And then, of course, you know, your offense is spectacular and flashy and these kind of things. So that makes people as wrestling fans gravitate towards you. But I think, yeah, like you said, it's because it just kind of feels – it doesn't feel like you guys are like a forced pairing. It doesn't feel like, you know, you're taking two people who have nothing in common and trying to make them do something. I think you guys, at least on the exterior, it seems like you guys have a lot in common and common goals and aspirations, at least in AWE and wrestling.
I feel like we have common goals. When I met Ken, literally – was at like Empire Wrestling, and they said like, hey, there's a Korean straight edge guy here. And I was like, I got to meet him. And so that's when we met, and we never worked on a show together until AWE. And I mean, honestly, like not like saying like we spend like the entire time in the locker room together, but we do spend a majority of the time like talking to each other and like cracking jokes. Even like my first show there, like we were like hanging out and talking, and then just went on from there, and they put us in the ring together, and we just kept doing the same thing. We just kept hanging out and talking. Like we don't, we're not miserable while we're out there. Cause, and I trust Ken and he trusts me. Like we're not going to get in the ring cause we're working tag teams that we've never met before. We don't know these guys. They show up to a show, they put on gear, and we meet that day and go out there and work with these guys. But I trust Ken enough where if anything was to go wrong, we could get out of it. Cause we're both like, I mean, not that being smaller matters, but we're smaller and we're just tired of like being overlooked. So we're going to hit hard and make sure people know who we are.
Yeah, it's pretty much like, I mean, hell, to be honest, and I'm just going to speak on the behalf of, like, I guess, the majority of our roster, including, like, us. And it's just like I said the other day to somebody, and I'm pretty sure I said it to you too, Chris. It's just a matter of the majority of us, I feel like, have been overlooked for so long that everybody that's there, there's a reason for it. And, you know, and like, and you can tell who's doing it for real and who's just kind of half-assing it. The guys that want it, the guys that are hungry, the guys that, you know, are busting their ass day in, day out, week in, week, you know, whatever, there's a chip on their shoulder. And it's no different with me. It's no different with Chris. You can see it. Not to, you know, talk badly about anybody, you know, some of like the, maybe the temporary guys or some, even some of the guys that were here that, you know, you kind of see off and on, you can tell. There's no disputing that. At least that's to me. I mean, if I'm wrong, hey. But to me, that's just how I look at everything.
Well, no, I mean, I think that a lot of the fans can kind of perceive that too. I mean, you look at how many of us we got behind the whole, you know, Chip Day top prospect Twitter campaign thing. I think we see there's lots of guys that we see in AWE that put on fantastic matches that we wonder, like, why are we the only one seeing these fantastic matches? Why? Right. Like, it's almost like you kind of have to stop and wonder, like, why are we getting such talented guys in this venue at this show for this crowd?
Yeah.
It's like it's almost like everybody. It's like a lot of people have come together. It's kind of this, like this, this misfit kind of pack. You know, everybody's kind of has their own different ways and paths and things that have gone on. And but they're all come together and they're all like, now's the time when we hold nothing back. Now's the time when we're all turning up our game and we're all doing the best we can. I think that's one of the things that makes AWE special, and that makes not only you guys special, but makes like reasons why guys want to come out of town and do this. Like Chris, you said, hey, you know, people had told you that if you want to make it in this area, like this is the place to go. I mean, that was even, you know, 6-7 months ago. I think that speaks just as true now, if not more so.
Correct.
That it's just, it's a place that, you know, guys want to come to because there's a big buzz around it. You guys are our guys. You're a big part of that. Now like there's, Fight Club. Hey man, but you don't talk about it.
But we want you to talk about it. Oh, so it's shit, like the opposite. It's weird.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Well. No. Yes, it is. That makes a lot of sense. Actually, it's like Fight Club that you want to talk about. But you know, the brightest and the best, the forgotten children of history, you know, come together to create magic. Really. So what now? On Saturday went Mike and I and a few of the other AWE regular fans went to UIW in Temple, Georgia. You guys wrestled the beautiful Bald Besties. Now, is that was at least what we thought your guys' first match outside of AWE as a team. Is that correct?
Correct, yeah.
We felt, and yet again, we felt the need to go out and go there and support you guys because you're like this, you know, these are our guys. This is like a big moment, you know, stepping outside of the AWE to see them perform. How do you guys feel that experience went the first time outside of Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment as the Spring Street Suicide Squad?
To me, it was really comfortable just for the fact that I know that when I get there, I have somebody that I know in the locker room, and which we did have other people too. But, like, instantly, like, I wasn't, like, freaking out about, like, being in a whole new locker room with new people, working new people that I haven't met, just because with, like, the comfort zone that we built between me and Kim, like, we can just pretty much go anywhere and know, like, hey, this guy's got my back. So, and it was great to actually work a tag team. It was like an established tag team.
An actual team.
Yeah, that's something that we're looking forward to do. Because, I mean, whether, like, me and Ken are over or not, and you guys cheer for us, we have had, like, that breakout performance yet, really. Like, we got to work the Lynches, and that was, I mean, it was great, but it just wasn't, like, a heel team that we can really, like, sink our teeth into and have an angle with.
Yeah.
Yeah, we kind of perceived that that was one of your first kind of big tests, just because it was, they were an actual tag team that have right. teamed together for years, you know. So that to us felt like one of the first big moments for you guys. But you're right. I mean, we want to, you know, I would like to see you guys work some kind of an extended angle with a, you know, you guys already make me want to cheer for you and get behind you. So now I need a team that makes me hate them that I can see you guys go up against.
We would love to work with, like, Team IOU. I would love, just for the fact of the crowd reaction we get, to go against the Hierarchy, so that way the Hierarchy fans, to see how they would react.
Yeah, you know what that turns into?
I mean, they would turn on you. You guys. They would have to.
They might turn on you. I hate to say it. You might get Broderway and Nathan and some of those other guys booing you.
And that's fine. Like, I want that to be the test, though. I want to get in there, and I want those guys to, like, actually be, like, at one point, like, torn. Like, they're like, who do we cheer for right now? Because these are our guys, the Hierarchy, but then these are, like, the guys that, because we're, when it comes to gimmicks, like, Hulk Hogan, like, had a gimmick, Macho Man Randy Savage had a gimmick, John Cena has a gimmick. If you came down to, like, what's mine and Ken's gimmick, it's, we're one of you guys. We hang out like you guys do. We like wrestling like you guys do. We want to just have a good time like you guys do. That was the whole, like, idea of, like, me and Ken get together, is we wouldn't be, like, a miserable thrown together tag team. We're going to just look like, hey, we're two guys hanging out. We're here to entertain you guys because you pay good money to see it.
So,
yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, I would like to see it. I would like to see what happens. You know, give it some time, let you guys get even more over than you are now, and then have the match with the Hierarchy and just see what happens. I think it'd be insane, really.
Right.
I'd like to go back to Temple real quick, just because it kind of, I've said this on the show before, that it kind of blew my mind when I heard that you guys were booked for that show, because it, like, you guys, as the Spring Street Suicide Squad, have felt like such, you know, AWE guys and an AWE thing, that it never actually occurred to me before then that you guys might work as the Spring Street Suicide Squad in other promotions.
Right.
Like I was, oh, cool, they're going to be on that show. I want to see that. And then I thought, that's amazing. Like, I never, it just didn't occur to me that that's a thing that could happen. And the more I thought about it, that you guys feel like such an organic thing that's happened within AWE, and AWE being a promotion that is so unlike what happens elsewhere in Georgia, and promotes itself as that, builds itself as, you know, we're not like everything else in this state, we are unique. So you guys being something that was so organically created inside of AWE, to then go out into other parts of Georgia and take that out to these other shows, was kind of amazing to me. And then I heard you were going to be wrestling the Besties, and my heart dropped, because I thought, oh no, Georgia's going to job these guys out to the Besties. It's going to be the worst thing that's happened all year. And thankfully that didn't happen. But going in, I was convinced, like, oh, they're going to take this great thing we've created and just, they're going to get squashed by this, you know, the best tag team in Georgia in 2015. So the whole time you guys are wrestling that match, I'm like on pins and needles, like, oh no, is this where they squash them? Oh no, please don't do it. So when they stormed out and ended by count out, I mean, I was very excited. Do you guys think you'll be back to UIW?
Yeah. Yeah. Matter of fact, I was speaking with Stan, it was actually last Sunday, because we talked a little bit after the show, but it was after the AW show that he was happy with everything. He's happy with what we brought to the table there. And, you know, at that point he was just telling me about some more dates. And once he knew, he was definitely going to get with us as far as, you know, bringing us back out there and seeing what we can do with the rest of the tag team division. So that's something I'm looking forward to. It should be fun.
Right. And, like, them putting us and Ken together, like you were saying, like, you didn't expect us to, like, go anywhere else.
Right.
But the cool thing about it is I don't think we did either. Me and Ken, like, I mean, when we got put together as a tag team, like, it wasn't like we were looking to be in a tag team. He was just hungry to break out, and so was I. So we were like, hey, right, might as well just band together and do it, because if that's what it's going to take, we're going to do it. But now we've, I mean, I'm not trying to, like, toot our horns or, like, say, like, any kind of spoiler, but, like, we got, like, a lot of opportunities knocking at our door right now, which is great, because this is what me and Ken have been looking for. So we're not going to fumble. We're definitely just going to, like, pick up the ball and take it and show everybody what we got. And, I mean, it's, we're more than thankful for AWE, but we can't wait to be in other towns doing the same thing, being called the Spring Street Suicide Squad and
right,
pinning, making other teams tap out and pinning other teams in different major cities.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds great to me. And I know you guys are getting some offers right now. There's one big one coming up that I don't know if that's announced yet, so I'm not going to say it, but I mean, it's pretty exciting to see what's coming up for you guys. Cause I mean, again, it's like you're saying, it's not like you were looking to become a tag team. It's just, it's kind of something that organically happened. And all of us at AW in the AWE crowd, I think all, you know, we feel like we've been a part of it. And so you're definitely feel like our guys, no matter what other promotions, you know, you go to, and which, you know, whatever shows you're working that we can get to, I think you'll see some of us there, because you really, you feel like ours until you get squashed by somebody like the Besties, and we're probably not going to be back to that promotion. But
we're going to be mad at those guys
for
squashing you.
I saw it coming together in my head, like, oh, Georgia's ticked at AWE. They're going to take this great thing and squash it to the Georgia tag team.
Right. No, I get that. The first piece of advice we got before we walked through the curtain to do that match, they were like, hey, no matter what, be yourselves out there. Don't just wrestle like the Southern style. Like, go out there and, like, continue to do what we were doing, even though we're facing, like, a tag team that works more of a Southern style. Like, do not right, change us.
So, yeah, just be us to the great end. You know, that's I mean, that's huge to me. Like, I don't ever want to stray from that. Like, you know, because if you're not comfortable doing something different, it shows. It shows on your body language. It's huge. And all of that stuff, it's literally within an instant. You can read it on anybody. So there's just no point. May as well just be you, do what you do, and, you know, get out there, take care of business, and then be done with it.
Well, I mean, and that's why we're, I think that's, yet again, that's why the fans have taken to you. That's why we've taken to you, because, you know, for those reasons, it's just, you guys have come together and you're being yourselves. And that's something that we can see and that we read and that we understand. Now I've heard speculation that, sometime, this year, AWE is possibly planning on bringing in official tag belts and doing a tag division. Now, of course, you guys would be our first pick in people we want to see in that. Who else would you want to possibly face specifically as a team in AWE for these possible tag team championships?
Sound of the Fury, Team IOU, the Lethal Weapons, the Hierarchy.
Yep.
Like, I want to go through every form of a team in AWE, so that way when we do win the first ever AWE Tag Team Championships, they know that, hey, these are the guys.
We're 48-0 right now, so, you know, hey.
They are.
Is it like the Bill Goldberg? Like, anytime you guys kick somebody, it's like a one. You know, you just add, you kick somebody, or you, you know, hit him with a move, and it just adds one. You're like, now he's 236-0 because he just speared four guys in the ring. Each one of those counts.
Anytime Ken kicks the crap out of somebody, or I do something like really stupid,
counts as a win.
It counts as a win.
I'm never escaping that stigma. I haven't even kicked anybody lately.
You kick people all the time. I mean, you're not like breaking noses, but you kick people all the time.
He kicks the crap out of them.
Right here on the show, which two members of the Hierarchy would you like to face? Who do you want to call out?
Chip and Murder, man.
Chip and Murder, the Kraken.
I want the Kraken.
Yeah, after watching them do what they did with Tommaso and Gargano, yeah. I mean, we definitely need to take them on, I think.
Okay, guys, you heard it here first. February 21st, Spring Street Suicide Squad's calling up the Kraken.
That's it. AWE fans, is hashtag SSSS versus Kraken.
That's going to happen. Hashtag we're gonna make this happen. Okay, we wanna guys, we've enjoyed talking to you. We absolutely, like we've said, you feel like our guys. So we love talking to you. We love watching you wrestle. Where can the fans find each of you guys on social media and those kind of things? We'll start with Ken. Where can our and your fans reach you on the internet?
All right. So we're going to start with that fantastic thing called Facebook. You can find me right under my name, Ken Lee. Of course, you know, I got the typical Boondock Saints gun picture hanging up right now as my profile picture. So there's that. You can find me on Twitter at Korea Ken Lee. Find me there on Twitter. And if any of you are gamers or any of that kind of crap, you can actually find me on Twitch also, if anybody watches that kind of thing. It's actually the channel for that. I'm sorry, what?
Seriously, you stream on Twitch?
Yeah. That's all the time.
What's your Twitch name?
It's twitch.tv, and I'm just going to spell it out for you. Ooh, that felt good for a second. Anyway, twitch.tv/ M-E-S-S.
I just got it.
Shut up, man. So now you messed me up. You messed me up. Anyway, so it's twitch.tv/ MESSATSU_KS. It's Masatsu_KS. Masatsu is a big Street Fighter thing. So, yeah.
Right.
Comes from Akuma. Some of you will know that. Right. And it's very evident with my own personal look as of late, but hey. But that's where you can find me. If you want to find me on Instagram, it's IndieKS, all capital letters. And that's pretty much it for me.
All right, Chris, where can we find you?
Mine's super easy. Instagram, Facebook, and, of course, Twitter. All of it is Chris Crunk with 1K.
Or in my backpack, you mean?
Or in his backpack.
With just the 1K. Okay, for just some the reason, there was some kind of confusion about multiple Ks. Ladies and gentlemen, it is Chris
Crunk. Okay. Some websites make me do 2Ks. Like, they're like, oh, Chris Crunk can't be a real name, but Chris Crunk with 2Ks can be. And you're like, oh, that makes perfect sense. Like, this weekend, I'll be at TWE Chattanooga wrestling Fred Yehi. And that's what I got going on.
When can we expect a Spring Street Suicide Squad t-shirt and or pro wrestling tees store?
I'm actually working on that now. I've got a few designs. I actually have to get with Ken and send him the designs, and we're going to pick one out, because that's something I'm going to work on indefinitely if we're going to start actually like taking the tag team other places too. And like, we're going to have like gear soon, all kinds of fun stuff.
Oh, yeah. Man, we were wondering that over the weekend when you guys were going to get gear.
Yeah. I nudged Mike and I was like, how long do you think till the guys get matching gear? She's like, what about in a couple months or so? You think of ordering it right about now?
Well, when we first got together, we were against it. We were like, we're not going to get matching gear because we don't know how long this is going to last.
Yeah.
And I also like the fact that I'm super sure that I'm going to turn on Kinley and join the hierarchy every week. So,
screw like you, buddy. Maybe I join. You know what? No, I won't even join the hierarchy. I'll make my own thing, and I'm just going to take everybody out. That's fine.
He's going to turn on Chris just for spite.
Yeah, just for spite.
So, that's it.
Just stay on the edge of your seats to see who turns on who first. Because it's a race to see who can
play another one. Who goes through the barbershop window glass first. Right?
Sure need that last Eggo waffle, my dude.
All right, gentlemen. I think on that note, we'll go ahead and say thank you. Thank you very much for being on the show, and we look forward to seeing very much more of the Spring Street Suicide Squad.
Well, I appreciate you. Thank you.
All right. That was Prime for Danger talking to the Spring Street Suicide Squad, two really great guys and a really cool tag team to see.
Yeah, you know, we were talking to him a little bit in the interview about seeing them at UIW in Temple. And when we got to the show, we had front row seats and they handed us a free poster, which like is always nice. I don't personally I don't really get why wrestling promotions are always trying to like shove posters on people, because they're, like, they're the most annoying thing in the world to carry around at a show.
Well,
like, you get into the show and you get your ticket and you get the poster, and then you, like, you're either going to crumple it carrying it around with you at the show, or you got to turn around and walk all the way back out to your car to stash it and then come back in.
I think long ago it was, you know, people used to like to collect them from the 70s and 80s, but I think it was kind of different then, you know? So it's just, I think a lot of times when they do like a meet and greet, it's something that you don't have to pay extra for in order to get the wrestlers to sign. I think that's part of it too. But yet again, like you said, it kind of becomes an inconvenience, because even if you, yeah, you do get it signed, well, now you definitely have to take it out to your car, because you don't want to get, in, you know, crushed by seats or flying wrestlers. But yeah, so they were having a meet and greet. You know, at the show there were some other names there. Ciampa and Gargano were also at that show. But so we go up and we're talking to Ken Lee and Chris Kronk, and Adrian Armour's there.
Well, we waited in line already to talk to Gargano and Ciampa, and then we got back to our seats and we were talking about these posters. And you were explaining what you just explained, like, well, you know, maybe you get them signed by the guys, and we turned around and Chris and Ken had come out to like to a table with Adrian and Tyler standing there, and I was like, well, let's go get the poster signed.
And so, yeah, so we went over to do that. First off, of the four of them, none of them had a pen. Okay? Not a single Sharpie, one. Not a single
they didn't have, one.
Not even a pen. They had to go into the back of the locker room and find just like it ended up being just like a ballpoint pen, just an ink.
I was like, the visiting stars brought their own pen. What's your excuse?
I know. We're like messing with them. We're like, yeah, why do you expect us to have pens? You're the guys that are professional.
I already bought a ticket. I'm carrying around this poster. I've driven all the way out here, and I'm supposed to bring my own Sharpie.
Yeah, so we were kind of ribbing them and playing around, and so
Siler storms off in the back and comes back with like a Bic like just office pen.
Yeah, and then so we're like, okay, and they kind of look around, and then who is it? It's Chris Kronk grabs your poster first.
Well, no,
right?
Adrian was trying to sign, and it, like, the pen wouldn't write on the poster.
Yeah, it wouldn't write on the front because the ink on the back of the pen or the poster, like, it's like a, it's on a gray background, and so it wasn't showing up well. And that's when Kronk flips your poster over and starts writing a story. He decides, instead of signing it, he's going to write a story.
He starts writing a letter.
Yeah, Chris Kronk.
Yeah, he starts writing a letter like on the back of the poster, and he writes, "Help! I've been kidnapped and forced to wrestle to survive. As a joke, I was trained incorrectly. I need your help. Please call 911." And then like signs like, "Sincerely, Chris Kronk."
And so then Ken Lee goes, okay, man, now I gotta do this. So Ken essentially writes like the same thing, just in the opposite.
It's like, I have not been kidnapped. I was trained correctly. I do not need your help. Please do not call 911.
Yeah, call 711 or something. Yeah, side Ken Lee. So then we were like, I was like, oh, okay. And then I hand them my poster and I'm like, don't you guys just try to copy the same crap? I was like, you got to give us different stuff. So Chris Kronk then draws a picture of a cat. Like a picture of like a cartoon cat with an exceptionally large head, and he writes, right, "Fuck, that's a cat - Chris Kronk."
And then signs it Chris Kronk. Adrian Armour comes in and just writes AA, like
he just
like closer to the cat, like closer to the cat than Chris signed, so it looks like,
yeah,
how he drew the cat.
He puts some, it's some like little celebrity shorthand, like it's like two triangle half triangles and then a circle.
Yeah.
And then Ken Lee decides to draw a picture too. He's like, "Oh man, you got to give me something to do." He's like, "I got to think of something."
So
Kira Hogan is there. Right there, and so he starts sketching this very poorly done picture of Kira Hogan without her knowing it.
It looks like a bad Metalocalypse episode, is what it looks like.
Yeah, it's this really creepy thing. It's got these really weird tiny teeth,
with this giant mouth,
and he writes, "Girl on fire, fuck - Ken Lee." And Kira's like, "No, you can't do this, blah, blah, blah." And I'm like, I look at her and I'm like, "I'm going to post this on social media and tag you in it." She's just like, "Ah." And so I did that. I took a picture of it and posted it on there. And she didn't mention anything to it, but, you know, Ken favored it and retweeted it. But just an unusual story, and, you know, just kind of showing the, what kind of goofy
personality these guys.
Yeah, goofy guys they are, and also how they kind of have, you know, we kind of have this kind of relationship with them as like our guys, and they're kind of like, you know, they kind of share that with us, and they're playing jokes and goofing around with us.
Like, and like, you got to understand, yeah, all of this is going on like no less than 6 feet away from Ciampa and Gargano, with all of their gimmicks out all over their table.
Yeah,
and like talking to fans and selling DVDs. We're like at the next table over, right next to them, just jacking around with these
and
posters.
It's a blank table. There's nothing on the table.
Yeah, all four of them, the Suicide Squad and the Lethal Weapons, were like, they're just standing there behind this empty table for some odd reason.
So like somebody went in the back and said, hey man, you guys, it's a meet and greet, come on out and, you know, say hi. But yeah, right, you know, less than 6 feet away from them are, you know, guys who are currently on national television, and here we are just goofing around with our friends, with our homegrown guys.
Well, the moral of the story is, wrestlers, bring Sharpies to any wrestling event you're at, because you never know when you'll need to sign something.
Or artistic/creative writing skills.
That works too. All right, well, that's the show for today. Mike and Danny, once again, thank you for joining me. Guys, thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of the Fans of Wrestling Show. And make sure, if you're in the Atlanta area and if you want to hang out with some other wrestling fans, check out Cobb Wrestling Fans on Facebook and Meetup.com. And we'll cut this part out. And guys, also make sure you like us on Facebook at FOW Radio. Follow us on Twitter at FOW Radio. Danny is on Twitter at Danny F and Danger. I'm on Twitter at Yellow Maniac. Make sure you subscribe on the GWH Radio Network, on Stitcher, iTunes, and Blog Talk Radio. And until next time, keep watching wrestling.
Time is now.
Yeah, see me. My time is now. Down for the 3 second pan. Don't mess around with FOW. You might end up in a body bag.
Might end up in a body bag.